Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, ineffective, unaccountable, and opaque. A scathing report by the Media Standards Trust on press self-regulation. Also in the podcast...
You are the weakest link, goodbye.
The kids aren't all right. Why the weakest link has ruined children's TV. Plus...
I thought it was going to be Law & Order London, and then there was... I was told that no, it's probably better if it's UK because outside of London, there's not that love of London that you Americans think there is.
The creator of Law & Order, Dick Wolf, tells us about the series' UK spin-off. And is Matthew Wright about to become Five's answer to Jeremy Paxman?
Yeah, what's the point, Mick? You know, you want to get me pulled off air so we can have some boring old nonsense with Jeremy Kailish shouting at people? If that's what you want, mate, turn over. It's on the other channel.
It's all coming up on Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, this week, the BBC handed the contract for Gardener's Question Time to independent production company Something Else. But there are no shrinking violets in the pod today. Maggie Brown is a Media Guardian columnist and biographer of Channel 4. Not one to gild the lily, are you, Maggie?
I think I'm a sort of cheerful little snowdrop. I keep popping up.
More of a snowdrop. Steve Greenfingers Busfield is the Guardian's head of media and technology. I wish you'd wiped your wellies before coming to the studio, Steve. The mud's held to shift.
They go very nicely with my flowery shirt.
They do, yes. Gareth McLean will be here to tend the allotment a little later, but with this metaphor stretched well beyond its sell-by date, it's time to move on.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on Guardian.co.uk.
Now, the Press Complaints Commission came in for a fair bit of a hammering this week in a new report by the Media Standards Trust. The study concluded that the PCC's process of self-regulation is, to quote, not sustainable in its current form, and that it's failing both the press and the public, in particular when it comes to accuracy, privacy, and accountability. The transition from the traditional newspaper model to a 24-hour multimedia and interweb-focused beast is, of course, at the heart of all of this. Sir David Bell from the Financial Times Group is chairman of the Media Standards Trust. I asked him more about the failings that he sees in the PCC.
So far as it goes, when it's doing the things that it does and it reports on its website, and I think I may now know its website as well as it does, the individual handling of individual complaints is absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Sir Christopher Mayer himself said in a speech in November that it's been very, very difficult to get the press to give the PCC very much publicity for being there, getting people to correct stories when there are mistakes with as much prominence as when they were originally made is extremely difficult. And actually, the number of complaints that the PCC has, although it's risen, is much less, I think, than the Guardian Reader's editor gets, far less than the BBC gets, and actually is not a very large number of complaints. 80% of the complaints that the PCC gets, it doesn't actually investigate. And by one statistic, the chances of a complaint to the PCC being upheld are something like 1 in 250. But I think that the conclusion from part one of our report is not that the PCC itself is somehow a terrible organization, not at all, but that it's not actually focusing on what the issues now are, partly because it's not set up to do that, and partly because it just isn't doing it.
So, as you pointed out in your report, other industries subject themselves to self-regulation. So you're not saying that self-regulation per se doesn't work. It's just that this particular system isn't working as well as it ought to be. Would that be a fair summary?
What we're saying, I think, is, first of all, that other organisations, other industries, have spent a lot of time in the last few years rethinking the way their self-regulation works. And actually, the PCC, in our view, hasn't. I think the members of the Media Standards Trust, because that's slightly different from the members of the committee, are united in the view that state regulation of the media is something that we would wish to avoid at almost every cost. Therefore, it's very important that self-regulation functions effectively and that it is considered to be transparent, accountable, effective, and recognized by the industry. Now, you know, The Guardian is a kind of... a hero newspaper in many ways, because the process by which you deal with issues and complaints and the way that you record them and so on is fantastic. It's completely self-regulation.
But no other newspaper has followed suit, has it?
No other newspaper has followed suit. My own newspaper operates effectively in the same way, but not as publicly as you do. But no other newspaper has followed suit. You know, the BBC also has a very elaborate process for doing this. And one of the questions we're asking is, why is it that this hasn't happened? Isn't it extraordinary, for example, that the PCC took itself out of being covered by the Freedom of Information Act?
You spend quite a lot of time on the PCC in your report. There's a whole chapter on it. So it's not transparent, as you say. It's not accountable in your view, and operates like a cartel. It seems to me that there's really quite a significant job of work that needs to be done to bring the PCC up to the standard of similar regulators, say the Advertising Standards Authority.
We deliberately, I mean, the committee thought very carefully about this. We deliberately decided not to talk to the PCC in the first phase of this report, but to assemble our assessment based on everything that was in the public print, whether it was on the website or their annual reports or speeches that had been made and so on. And obviously, in the second phase of this report, we need to talk through with all the interested parties, including the PCC, their view of this. We don't want to be in a position of presuming to answer for them before we've formally talked to them. But I think our conclusion was, if you look at the National Consumer Council checklist for what makes a good self-regulatory body, there are 15 criteria, and I think we calculated that the PCC doesn't meet something like 12 of them, or maybe even more than 12 of them. We think really effective self-regulation of the kind that you have is overdue for the British press and is something that needs to be worked on.
Sir David Bell there. Maggie, what did you make of the report? I mean, it was pretty scathing, but the chairman of the PCC, Sir Christopher Mayer, was on the Today programme this week, and he called it a cuttings job masquerading as a serious inquiry.
Well, he was incandescent, I thought. I mean, Sir Christopher Mayer is a very polished diplomat. The fact is that this report is only really part one, because this is the analysis of all of the failings, and they list about 15 points on which the PCC fails as a proper regulator. But they're proposing to come back in the autumn with their remedies, which is when I think we'll really see some fur flying. The fact is, we all know that the PCC is quite modestly funded. I've, in fact, sat in front of Sir Christopher Mayer's outgoing lecture come conversation last month, and he was admitting that some of the areas were disappointing. For example, a very simple one, the lack of advertising, the fact that a lot of people don't know that it's out there, and his failure to convince the press and magazines to give more promotion to the PCC. I suspect that also this is quite interestingly timed, because we've got a new chairman coming in as well. We've got the press really on its knees and distracted by the collapse in advertising and income. And so, in a sense, this is a report from a group who, I must say, seem rather self-appointed.
Yes, they are a bit, aren't they? But it's the first real go at a comprehensive look at regulation of the press, isn't it?
But, it is, for some time. And remember, too, that the other attacks have tended to be, you might say, on aspects, privacy or right to reply.
But this is about the whole process.
This is about the whole process. And some of the people on the committee, including Richard Hooper, who was deputy chairman of Ofcom, and before that was the chairman of the Radio Authority, do come with experience of regulation in other areas. And so they do know what they're talking about.
Yeah, so Simon Kellner, the press is represented. Simon Kellner is there. David Seymour, Ruth Wishart, Lord Wolfe, previously the Lord Justice, of course. Steve Busfield, the problem is, though, with the press, is that the press, seems to me, have always tried just to get away with what they can get away with, haven't they? You know, and in terms of regulation, and always just done the minimum.
Yeah, and we've managed to get away with it. It's that strange mixture of, you know, the political power of the press that it has, and you know, and no government quite wants to sort of get into a fight about how we're looked after. I mean, it's surprising that actually, after all of these years, and after Ofcom was given charge of so many different aspects of communications and media, that actually we didn't find ourselves as part of that when it comes to the internet and how it's regulated.
But this is where it's coming, isn't it?
It's even even unclearer at this point, and maybe that will be the point when the press comes under its purview.
Well, this is where it's raised in the report, and the current culture secretary, Maggie Baran, Andy Burnham, has said that he wants to have a go at the internet, and one feels that this is the area where convergence is going to hit the press, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, because the PCC won the right to regulate the newspaper-run internet sites. But, of course, that brings them directly into interfacing with this much more powerful and, in some ways, more officious regulator.
Well, this podcast is regulated by the PCC and not Ofcom,
exactly.
Interestingly.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we better watch out.
No, we don't. They're completely toothless. We can say what we want. Right. That's it. Looking forward, finally, Maggie, do you think that this report is going to start a serious debate, a policy debate even, amongst government, where people might start to move away from the position that Steve just described of just letting the press do what they want to do?
I think there are so many issues besieging British society and politics and the economy, that even though that there are very good arguments raised in this report, and we haven't seen their solution, I must say, as well, I would be very surprised if the self-regulatory approach was abandoned lightly.
OK, well, if you want to add your views to this story, go to our blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. You're listening to Media Talk. I'm Matt Wells. Still to come, is Anne Robinson responsible for the death of children's television? And
digesting a bellyful of clams generates a lot of wind, making walrus colonies very fragrant places.
Gareth McLean joins us to give his verdict on nature's great events, Generation Kill, and a look ahead to Law and Order UK. But before all that, let's depress ourselves somewhat with some of the other media stories of the week. Over to our old friend Rupert Murdoch, Maggie, and News International is cutting 65 jobs in an efficiency drive. This apparently Times reporters have had to buy their own notebooks.
Well, actually, compared with some of the cuts that have gone on, it seems to me pretty small beer and more like good housekeeping rather than swinging cuts.
Yeah. Shake up at 5 News, Matthew Wright. What's all this about, Steve? You can't go a year, can you, without a revamp at 5 News? What's this one about?
I think 5 News is excellent. I have thought it for a long time in its different the different formats that it uses. I often find, and this is a shocking thing to admit as a news journalist, that some of my diet in the evening of news is from that 2-minute bulletin before the 9 o'clock show. You know, at the beginning of CSI, for instance. And I think it's, you know, in a different way of telling news, I think it's very good. Dawn Airey says now that what she's going to do is she's thinking about revamping the evening so that she has a 6:30 till 7:30, I think, hour-long show, which is going to be based upon a Fox in America format, which is Fox and Friends. So this is going to be Five and Friends, which is news and opinion and quite whether it'll end up being, you know, being incredibly opinionated like Fox and have shouting matches or not, I don't know.
Well, they sort of used to do this. They went through in one of the many incarnations of Channel 5 News. There was a period when Kirsty Young was presenting when there would always be two guests on and who would comment on the news, and it was usually Kevin Maguire and I was going to say Angela Lansbury. That's not who I mean at all. I mean Amanda Platel.
easy
mistake to make. But it's that kind of thing, isn't it? They'll have commentators on, or perhaps it'll be a regular lineup. What about Natasha Kaplinsky though?
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of little subplots to this story because Matthew, does the morning show for Channel 5, which is run by an independent production company, Princess, which has a long contract still to go on it. Is he going to continue doing this and do an evening show? If he does both of them, what happens to Natasha? Will it be him and Natasha?
No, she was meant to be the big. Yes,
I think. I mean, the big star. She was the big signing. She's been off on maternity leave. You could probably put the two of them together to do a show.
Yes.
Although, you know, I'm personally more of a fan of Matthew's presenting than I am of Natasha's, but there's a certain age of gentlemen who are big fans of Natasha.
You have to remember Five is cutting costs. I mean, Five is really in a very difficult economic situation than probably Channel 4. There's two things here, really. I mean, Matthew Wright survived the cull, which saw Tricia cut. He is, I think, a very professional, very fast-thinking broadcaster. Plus, they have to, you remember, they have to actually fulfil their news quotas. That's the sort of the bottom line of the licence. Whatever else goes under pressure, they have to still do news. This is aligned with cuts. Of course, an hour is if you can make a magazine show and make it efficiently, it's quite a good place to play it. Mm. Because they've always had a problem early in the evening. They've lined up their two soaps, remember, Neighbours and Home and Away. And then what do they do against the might of ITV and the BBC?
Right.
So it's a strategic and a cost-saving thing as well.
We'll see what happens there when that comes into play. Interesting news from the sports world, the sports broadcasting world this week. Setanta lost out on one of the packages that they currently have for Premiership football rights, didn't they, Steve, which has raised questions about the whole future of Setanta.
Yeah, well, I mean, Setanta had one third of the live football matches, and now they've got one sixth.
It's all the rubbish ones, isn't it?
Yeah, they've kept Saturday evening and they've lost Monday night, I think, which the big football matches, the ones that you're going to get a big audience for, are the Sunday afternoon ones and the Monday night ones, because they're good times to watch football. Saturday evening, you've already been to a game, you're planning to go out, you've got the kids, you probably aren't going to sit down and watch a football match. Setanta sort of came into this game with big plans about how they were going to shake it up, make Sky's life much more difficult. I think there was an idea that the people who'd invested in Setanta in the first place would sell out when they'd made the business exceptionally valuable. What they've learned, however, is that you mess with Sky at your peril. Mm. This is the same Sky that saw off BSB. This is the same Sky that saw off On Digital, and it looks very much like they might see off Setanta.
Mm, interesting.
I see this very much like when Channel 4 tried to do deals in the early days of multi-channel Film 4 subscription service. And what actually happens with Sky is that they're very happy to have, you might say, weak competitors, and they have the power to keep them weak. Mm. They don't like to have powerful competitors. And the fact here is, we've actually stopped our subscription only in December to Setanta. Found it so irritating and annoying and to deal with. And the problem is Sky does it all very well, and it's just got so much money. I suspect it actually wants to keep Setanta alive because for competition reasons.
But it has to too, though, doesn't it? Because the European Commission ruling was that Sky wasn't allowed to have all of the football, which then actually became a terrible thing for football fans, because
if you
wanted to have all the matches, then you had to have two different
subscriptions. Well, actually, my husband's mad about boxing, and I mean, crazy about boxing, and they had some.
You
very
learn
big
a new thing every day about Microsoft.
they had a lot of big boxing matches, and it was that which drove him to subscribe, but also drove him slightly mad because they didn't have very good customer sales at the beginning.
Oh, right. Okay. And just a brief tweet on Twitter. I promised that we'd set up a Media Talk Twitter feed. I haven't done it. I think we're too late already, frankly. It's enough already about Twitter. Who's Jonathan Ross, Toby Young, Simon Mayo, and what's his name, the comedian? Stephen Fry. He's made it. That's why it's in the news this week, isn't it, Twitter?
And Jemima Kish.
And Jemima Kish. Well, I think we'll leave the Twittering to Jemima. More on all these stories, plenty of others, to mediaguardian.co.uk. Time to move on to television, and this week another self-flagellating report by the BBC Trust saying this week that the move of the weakest link to BBC One has had a negative impact on the nation's youth. It's all the fault of Anne Robinson. They've moved her mini quiz over to the main channel, meaning that children's staples like Blue Peter and Newsround have been shunted around the schedules, and they've lost about 100,000 viewers in the process. Now, Maggie Brown, you've got a bit of a bee in your bonnet about children's TV generally. What did you think of this report?
Well, in some ways, I can see that there is a big issue, and it's not so much that whether or not the weakest link should be on BBC One. It's really this issue of children's television being pushed around, being at the bottom, really, of priorities rather than at the top. I think what happened is that, scroll back 18 months or so, children's television was not the big political hot potato it is at the moment, where everybody has suddenly, including cabinet ministers, have realised that there has to be more investment in children's television, etc., etc., all the things that we've been seeing coming out of Ofcom. The BBC, and BBC One in particular, was in a panic because it had lost Neighbours, so it had to find something quickly to put into this slot. And the weakest link was longer than Neighbours, so it wasn't so much a plot, but it was sort of happenstance. But it shows this degree of carelessness, if you like, about children's television. The other issue, of course, is that the BBC has to actually juggle with a lot of different audiences. And so the children's audience is one, but then so are the sort of pensioner, other type of audiences who they hope will then go on to watch the 6 o'clock news, Housewives. So they clearly felt that that children's at this point in the evening was expendable. And after all, didn't they have two children's channels anyway to go and watch? In the bigger plot, which is to keep up the audiences for news, I'm very pleased with the Trust actually for bringing this up because
I am because
for example, in this report, there's many good things about children's television. They are insisting that all of the money that's spent on children's television is added together and aggregated, because before, if it went out on BBC One, like the Sarah Jane Adventures, the spin-off from Doctor Who, it could be put on the BBC One budget. So if it was then cut, you wouldn't notice that children's spending had gone down. Do you see what I mean? So they've actually insisted that there's a ring-fenced, or benchmark, they would call it, benchmark, number for children's programming. And this is the first time they've actually put their foot down. And I think, again, that was driven by their sudden realisation that CITV had collapsed and the BBC's contribution really became so much more important.
Steve, I was just going to bring you in a second, but from blogs, and this got people very excited this week on Organ Grinder, things ain't going to change, said that the sad thing is the weakest link is today far more educational than Blue Peter. Kids are media saturated from a very young age. Perhaps the time of institutions like Blue Peter's passed. Today, kids have the internet, about a trillion TV channels and games consoles. If playing outdoors can barely compete, what chance does good old Blue Peter have? It's a good point, isn't it? There's lots of other media sources for
There are lots of other media sources, and I think Maggie made a very good point when she talked about the success of CBeebies and CBBC. I think they are fantastic channels. My children love them dearly. And when you have services that are so specifically tailored for those audiences like that, it's sort of quite easy for the BBC to sort of say, well, we do that and we do it for children and we do it very well. What is the place for, you know, for children's TV
on BBC One? Yeah. Well, it's a fair point, isn't it?
It is a fair point. I mean, actually, I'm not sure that my children watch any children's TV on BBC
One. No, but Loopy didn't.
They watch a bit of BBC Two on a Saturday morning, but most of the time it's CBeebies or CBBC, with a bit of a fight between the two of them because they're in different age categories.
Oh, right.
And one of them wants In the Night Garden and one of them wants, you know, wants Biker Grove.
Who wins? Well, that's been cancelled, of course.
Yeah.
Who wins, though, Steve?
They get to take it in turns, right. And, you know...
I'm sure there's more than one house in the Busfield
the
Gibson
point, the point
house.
About, the point about
more,
this,
more
though,
than one TV, I should say.
The point about this, though, is it's almost like a symbolic importance, because the BBC's got to also discuss... and really, in a sense, this is a bit like the previous item on the press. This is only stage one. The BBC is going to go on to discuss what they do about older children, teenagers, the 13 and older. And so there's this whole question, really, about why are children, older children, suddenly abandoned by the BBC? Why is children's radio not going anywhere? There's been this drift, you could say, away from being perhaps child-centred enough at the BBC and on BBC One as well. And it's the visibility factor, which I think is really quite a big part of this report.
Hasn't there long been that problem, that, you know, having just... mistakenly counted Biker Grove as being one of those programmes. That was sort of, you know, that was the older age group type
yes,
of programme.
They dropped that.
And
they've dropped Grange Hill, you know, as well,
but, you see. But beyond that, there was very little. I mean, I'm not sure that I watched children's television after the age
it's
of
It's all Skins 40. And Hollyoaks now, isn't it? Isn't that what they watch these days?
Yes, it
yeah,
is.
Well, there we are. You mentioned it, Maggie. There's another exciting BBC Trust report to watch out for in the next couple of years.
Well,
they're just, you know, it's you can't have enough BBC Trust reports, I think that
they're really getting onto the sort of the high horse on this thing now. We're going to see lots of them looking at BBC services.
Good stuff. Well, if you want to have your say on this, post your comment on our blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Sticking with TV for the final section of the podcast, and luckily enough, The Guardian's TV writer Gareth McLean is here too.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Who have you been meeting this week?
Well, I met Geert Wilders, the Dutch MP.
You
I've
did
been
not.
Tonging his hair. Where did he get his hair done,
it's horrible, isn't it?
I think that's the least horrible thing about him.
He wasn't allowed past the check-in desk. It wasn't the check-in desk, the immigration desk.
He does look like a trolley dolly, though, doesn't he?
Anyway, more exciting?
Much more exciting. I was meeting Jamie Bamber, who plays Lee Adama in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
It was very exciting. But I also met Dick Wolf, legendary TV
porn star
producer. No, he's not a porn star.
Dick Wolf, doesn't it?
Only in your grubby little head. Probably. That's how he sounds. But no, he's the Law and Order, the man behind the Law and Order brand, as he calls
which
it.
Is coming to Britain, of course.
It's coming to the UK. And I was asking him what he thought the appeal of the brand was.
The real appeal is that it doesn't matter if you don't see the show for a week, a month, a year, 3 years. When you come back, you get a complete meal with a beginning, middle, and an end. And you leave kind of satisfied that it's a story unto itself, but it's in this cosmology that people have come to really like. You have to pay attention. I mean, there are certain rules that if you're a regular watcher, that information is never repeated twice. If you miss it, you'll catch it by what they're doing. But we try never to tell the same thing twice in the same episode. Again, there's not time to repeat information. If it's cooking, you want to keep the heat up and keep it moving.
Dick Wolf there in a noisy cafe. Law and Order. It was quite noisy, wasn't it?
It was quite noisy. I was a bit worried.
Thank you for recording that. Law and Order London.
Law and Order UK.
So now, what is?
I kept getting in trouble because every time I mentioned it to Laura Mackey, she went, Law and Order UK. And I was going, no, Law and Order London. She was like, UK.
You're a fan of Law and Order, aren't you?
I'm a big fan of Law and Order Special Victims Unit. and that noise. I'm just a fan of that noise.
That's the sex crimes one, isn't it?
It is the sex crimes one.
Are you a Law and Order man, Steve?
No, I've never seen it. Although people on Organ Grinder and on the Wire blogs talked about it a lot, and what I really want is somebody to start broadcasting it from the very beginning and say we're broadcasting it from the very beginning. You know, so
well,
FX,
yes.
Go on. It's the very antithesis of all those Wire-type shows and Battlestar-type shows, because they're sort of formulaic stories, with sort of self-contained stories within 40 minutes, bish-bash-bosh and out. So you can actually watch them in any order.
There must be some story. But CSI is similar.
It's the same sort of thing.
But there is a sort of a progression, and there's a sense to it that hangs together.
There is, but you don't
There's also a ridiculous around America CSI, NY, CSI, Miami sort of franchising of it as well.
It's interesting you should say that, because Dick Wolf differentiates his Law and Order from CSI, because he describes CSI as a franchise, because in effect it's the same in every city, but Law and Order is a brand, because the shows are quite different.
Well, we have to wait and see if it's any good or not, won't we? Can I tell you what I'm angry about on the television? I'm always angry about something, but I'm angry about...
Is it Kay Burley?
No, it's not Kay Burley. She's the Benjamin Button of Sky News, you know.
But does she look like a withered old man?
No, she doesn't look...
Matt
thinks exactly the opposite.
No, she's looking younger and younger. Every relaunch, there's been another relaunch of Sky News this week, of course. They've got a new studio, it looks quite nice. But she looks weirder and weirder. Younger, she looks younger.
That's what the love of George Pascal Watson will do for you.
It's exactly what I said.
It is.
Have you experienced the love of George Pascal Watson,
I was a George fan.
What I'm angry about is relocation. To talk about flogging a dead horse. They never buy the bloody property, do they? And what's the point? And
like,
this week...
Well, nobody's buying property at the moment.
And that's true. This week, what was really annoying was not only did they not buy the properties, either of the properties even, that they were suggested, but they ended up buying a property that they had seen before they went on the show. So what's the point of the show? And what's... Sorry.
Do you know what, Matt?
But don't you think it's meant to be about Kirsty and Phil? That they have their little
no,
arguments
it's not about
and
that.
Their competition?
I think
they should just have sex and be done with it. It's like moonlighting, isn't it? And then we can just stop. Once they've resolved that sexual tension, we can all go home.
Or they'll flog it on for several more series and it just won't be the same.
I think the
ratings are signing
up. Like they're at that stage already.
Well, yeah. Anyway, so that's what I'm angry about. What are you angry about anything or excited about anything? I tell you what Steve's excited. I know what Steve's excited about. Generation Kill.
Absolutely. And, you know, and Channel 4 have bought this one, too. So unlike The Wire, it's not going to stay a sleeper hit on FX and DVDs. It's actually going to hit, a large audience.
I thought Channel 4 didn't have any money.
No, but, well, this was before the credit crunch, presumably. Right. They signed that deal. Have you, Mad Men, I know that Maggie has been falling asleep in front of Mad Men 2.
Yes, I did. I was trying to watch it, and both times I'm afraid I fell asleep.
And Maggie's got the stamina for John Adams.
And Mad Men 2. I'm the woman who's literally stuck by John Adams, and in fact was in tears on Saturday night when it finished, so there we go. Mm.
What else have we got on your list? I had Nature's Great Events on my list.
Oh, wasn't that marvellous?
That's what the Beatles.
That's what I pay the licence fee for.
Exactly.
How many Jonathan Rosses can we get? I don't know. Yeah, I watched that.
Anything,
let's put it that way.
Anything else, Gareth, before you go?
Midsummer Murders.
Oh, yes.
Inspector Tom Barnaby.
This is this breaking.
Blood
this is big news.
Raincoat.
Big news. He's leaving. What's his name again? The actor, remind me?
John Nettles.
That's right.
He's Bergerac.
Bergerac. Yeah, I was going to say. some bloke that was on a detective series when I was a kid. Well, anyway, there's an opening.
There is, and I am available, of course, as I am for most of these jobs. But now that Radio 2 one's gone...
Well, you've got the facial hair for it.
I do, thank you.
And I'm not sure how many new ITV dramas are going to be coming down the slipstream.
No, they've cancelled them all, haven't they?
Well, they seem to be cancelling the ones that are made north of Watford.
Yeah, well, rather, they're not more accurately, they're not broadcasting the ones that they have made.
No, they're broadcasting the ones that they've made, but they're not making any more.
No, they've got there's a combination
of Mackie, you know about this.
No, they've got a stockpile of 24 Heartbeats and 12 Royals up in Yorkshire TV. So,
12 Royals, that sounds like a Channel 4 documentary. The old Pocket Princess effect. Margaret.
But no, I mean, they're decommissioning drama in order to make cheaper factual programs.
I think it sounds like a recipe. Take 24 Royals, mix with 14 Heartbeats, and anyway, I think that's better.
It's a recipe if you're a cannibal.
It's a recipe for disaster. Maybe they'll put them all on Blighty.
Oh, God. I'd lose track of these channels with one name.
I know. Well, it used to be called UK TV People, apparently. Right. I didn't even
Did
watch
anyone
that
watch
one.
It?
No, I don't think they'll watch the new one either. No,
it's
anyway,
Rich and Judy all over again.
It is Rich and Judy. What's happening to Rich and Judy?
Well,
They've
I think,
just disappeared down
Well, there. I think that it's accepted that it hasn't worked moving them onto UK TV and Watch. And although the contract runs for a year, I suspect that's it.
What'll happen to Rich? And that'll be the sad demise from ITV to Channel 4 to Watch to...
Well, I don't think they should have ever left ITV because they were never really Channel 4 people and they were treated quite badly there.
They've got their daughter to carry on the brand.
Exactly.
Who's their daughter?
God, it's enough to drive you to drink.
Who's the daughter?
Chloe.
I've never heard of her.
She was spotted in the papers smoking dope from a bong.
Oh, I see. Well,
I didn't know people still used bongs.
Only Olympic athletes and Richard and Judy's daughter.
Allegedly.
Right, I know you're trying to get a blowback from
very
anyway.
Good
what? Oh, right, that's quite enough. That's
blowback.
If you didn't hear that, just as well. That's it for this week. I think I managed to talk over it successfully.
What for a change?
Producer Ben, is that right? Anything else that you want me to say? No, that's it. That's it for this week. If you want to have your say of any of the topics, go to guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or search for Media Talk on Facebook. Maggie Brown. Maggie Brown is packing her bag. She's hung up her headphones. She's on her way out.
It's like one of those people at the theatre where people are just doing the finishing speech.
I'm sorry, I should be watching the credits rather than you. I should be sitting there sort of snoozing to the music.
Packing up.
Macbeth's not dead yet.
You don't understand. I've got a very upset Labrador at home who hasn't done a walk.
Quick, run!
I have to take my chocolate Labrador for a
while. Oh, well, okay, if you let me finish, I'll be...
chocolate Labrador.
Oh, I will get there. You can get in a second. My thanks, she's got to go. My thanks to Gareth McLean, Steve Busfield, and Maggie Brown, who you'd be pleased to know. They've all followed the lead of the bankers and declined their podcasting bonuses. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. See you next time. Goodbye.